Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is June 13th, 2012. This is show number 23 with our co-host, Dr. Adil Kasim, MD, a fourth-generation homeopath. And I very much anticipate each Wednesday morning when we can get together and talk about homeopathy, studying and learning together. I hope that we have lots and lots of groupies. I see a couple of folks are coming on as guests on the chat. I just opened that up for you. If you want to comment or post a question, you can go out and tweet, let other folks know that the show has begun, put it on your Facebook. And also, you can embed these shows into your websites so people can listen directly from your own website, these enlightening shows. So we're going to be continuing on with the series. If you have a Kent Repertory book, we're studying the chest chapter, rubric by rubric, and going through them in detail with stories and experiences, answering questions. I love to start off our shows with some quotes, and I will do that today while we're waiting for Dr. Adil to get on to the network. I know that sometimes through monsoon season, the internet connections are not perfect and they have difficulty. The world does not need tourists who ride by in a bus, clucking their tongues. The world as it needs those who will love it enough to change it with what they have where they are. That's the quote that I'm going to start with today. And I picked it because last week there is a rubric in the chest section called clucking sound. And we didn't really have too much to say about it, but I thought it was quite unusual. You always think about a hen or a chicken clucking and the sound that it makes. And the doctor said that perhaps only the cardiologist can hear the sound. Okay, we have our co-host on the show with us. That quote, "The world does not need tourists to ride by in a bus clucking their tongues. The world as it needs those who will love it enough to change it with what they have where they are," was authored by Robert Fulghum, who published 8 best-selling books, including the one titled "All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten," which was a Grammy nominee for the Spoken Word Award and is performed on many television shows and for PBS Public Broadcasting. He's known all over Europe and probably the world. So I thought that
Hello.
Hello. Are you able to hear me today?
Yeah, perfectly well.
Oh, great. If you are able, put up your sound just a bit because I hear my own. Oops. Now I'm hearing a reverberation. So make sure anyone who's listening to the show, like Juan Garcia is out there from Spain. Thanks for joining us. If you're listening to this show and you call in, you've always got to turn down, turn off the sound on your website browser when you're on the phone. Okay.
Hello.
I started. Okay, so we don't get any echoing back there from the speakers. So that was the first quote. And you know how it is with Homeopathy World Community. We are doing our best to inform the public, to create waves of awareness, to get groupies out there who listen to your show every week. I want to congratulate you. That last week's show hit the top pages of all of the health shows on the Blog Talk radio network.
The congratulations goes to you and your team. I'm just one small part of the team.
Well, it's your voice and your knowledge and wisdom that people come to listen to. So I'm just so thrilled that you're here with us. So what Robert Fulghum is saying is, don't just wag your tongue. Do something with your hands. Tell some other people about the show and try homeopathy to see if it's going to be right for you. The next quote is by Ambrose Bierce, who Gwinnett is his last name fully, and he was born in 1842. And as an American newspaper man, wit satirist, and author of sardonic short stories based on themes of death and horror, his life ended in an unsolved mystery. So here is what he says. Belladonna is a noun. In Italian, a beautiful lady. In English, a deadly poison. A striking example of the essential identity of the two tongues. That's quite interesting. He is quite horrific in his thoughts. I don't know how it's going to work into our talk today about the heart, but belladonna probably comes in as a good heart remedy.
Of course, it's a prime remedy for many conditions involving the heart, as well as many other infections relating to the heart. And congestion, basically, congestion is the feature what we are going to discuss. It is a prime feature of belladonna.
Oh, perfect. I mean, you know, this is all serendipity. Whatever quotes I pull out of the air, we seem to find a way to put it in. And the last quote I'm taking from Paracelsus, who was posted on Facebook this morning by Dr. Amir Mustafa from Lahore, Pakistan. He says, Paracelsus says, no knowledge is perfect unless it includes an understanding of the origin, that is the beginning, and as all man's diseases originate in his constitution. It is necessary that his constitution should be known if we wish to know his disease.
Okay.
Is that nice? Okay, so we are ready to begin.
Well, before I begin, I have got, 3 to 4 people have asked me different questions I'm going to answer. One question was from Mrs. Christina from Rhode Island, USA. And she has asked me, what is the importance of history taking, taking history of distribution of edema or a swelling in the body? Christina, the history of distribution of edema may help as follows. The edema related to heart or cardiac edema rarely involves the face or the upper extremities. Edema mainly affecting the face and arms is more likely to be due to venous or ineffective obstruction by clot or a cancer or neoplasm. Facial edema is a feature of nephrotic syndrome, that is, inflammation in the kidneys. It is also a feature of angioneurotic edema, what we call. It's a allergic condition, a very severe allergic condition, angioneurotic edema, and any inflammation related to glomeruli of the kidneys. So there you'll are most likely to have facial edema. Swelling or puffiness of hands and fingers, as I told you, is not a symptom of cardiac disease, but over a period of time, long period of time, you may also have such a swelling. edema of cardiac origin will always be preceded, rather generally be preceded by dyspnea or breathlessness on exertion. And the patient is likely to complain initially of fatigue and breathlessness on the severe exertion, then the severity, the length of work or the time of work keeps on decreasing, and in a short span also the patient feels breathless. In isolated right heart failure, edema is always first and breathlessness is always second. Left heart failure, breathlessness is first and edema is, follows later on. But in right heart failure, it is edema always first. It's generalized edema, mainly pedal edema, that is edema on the legs, and then you have symptoms of breathlessness. That's an important point as far as heart failure is concerned. And also, patients with congestive cardiac failure, that means heart failure, may have edema restricted to the sacral region after prolonged bed rest. So this is, in short, the importance of taking history of distribution of edema. How is it there? Second question is asked by Dr. Zain, one Dr. Zain from Lahore, Pakistan. He has asked, what is the importance of history of fatigue and weakness in a cardiac patient or in any patient? Well, Dr. Zain, there are many, many disorders and diseases apart from heart disease which can cause fatigue and weakness. Anxiety, simple anxiety or depression, anemia, thyrotoxicosis, they are primarily associated with fatigue and weakness. Even certain drugs, like for example, if you give drug for vigorous diuresis, Digitalis for example, use of beta blockers, which are prime drugs for controlling blood pressure, hypertension, hypokalemia, if the potassium levels in the blood decreases, they often cause fatigue as the first symptom. And all excessive fatigue, I mean, the patient, sometimes a patient of heart attack or global myocardial ischemia or an infarction would not complain of pain, would not complain of breathlessness, but could complain of extreme fatigueness and weakness, fatigue and weakness. Whereas fatigue only in the morning, at the start of the day, which wanes off as the day progresses, is classical of depression. So various others, many more other disorders also cause fatigue, but these are more important ones. Anxiety, depression, anemia, thyrotoxicosis, drugs like diuretics, beta blockers, hypokalemia, hypotension, heart attacks obviously, and fatigue in the morning which goes down during the day is a feature of depression. Another person from Pakistan himself, no sorry, Bangladesh, Dr. Ziaul Hassan from Bangladesh, he's not mentioned the city from which he's there. He has asked me, what is the significance of increased abdominal girth? Well, increased abdominal girth generally indicates ascites or filling of fluid inside the abdominal cavity. And it's particularly in a patient of congestive heart failure. Also, other causes of ascites are cirrhosis of liver, nephrotic syndrome, or any malignancy in the abdomen that can cause ascites. So these are three questions were asked to me by different people from different countries, and I've tried to answer them as short as possible.
Okay, I also noticed on the network, I think it was Ruth asked a question from your last show, because I was just re-listening to it before this one. You mentioned giving lycopodium, and I'm not exactly sure for what at what point in the discussion, and she wanted to know the potency to give. I think it was during chilliness you mentioned lycopodium.
No.
Coldness. Coldness.
No. It was she who has already given lycopodium, and I had asked her what was the reason for her giving lycopodium to her husband.
Oh, okay.
I have given her Orimet. I have not given her lycopodium.
Okay.
The entire history pointed towards aurometallicum. Okay.
All right. So now we're ready to open up the book, Kent's Repertory, page 825. We're still in the C's for congestion. Hyperemia of chest. Is that how we pronounce it?
Yes, absolutely correct. And you have got loads of symptoms. Like belladonna is in 3 marks. as expected, aconite and belladonna, briar and cactus. Lachesis, obviously, Nux vomica, rustox. Glonine is not there.
Do we need to add that?
Yeah, glonine is one of very, very important. Yeah, it is there, but only in 2 marks. Clinically, congestion, all congestive headaches, one of the finest drugs is glonine. Our clinical experience stays there. Congestion here is in chest, but for headaches, congestive headaches, because of hypertension. And even congestion chest, I mean, if the BP increases and one starts having heat in the chest, around the chest, the drug of choice would be glonine, not and amyl nitrate. So glonine here is given 2 marks, but one should elevate it to 3 marks because clinically it is much more superior. Amyl nitrate, unfortunately, is not given in Ken's repertory. It's all in the rubric of congestion. Amyl nitrate.
Amyl nitrate, okay.
Yeah.
So for the folks who are new to this, if we are opening our book, we see 3 different kinds of fonts. We have one that is bolded, and one that is italicized, and the one that is plain font. The top one, or what do you call it, third letter?
Yeah, third degree
is the bold, and second degree is italic, and the first degree is normal type.
Yeah, and when we choose remedies, we always choose the third degree remedies first.
Okay.
So that's the importance of the bold letters. We do not consider the single, plain letter words are not considered as, I mean, they are there, but clinical application, it's very rare of plain letter word, letter. Bold and at the most italics would count. So congestion as a rubric has got many remedies, starting right from aconite, ending in Veratrum viridi. That is, after Thuja, it is Veratrum V. It's not Veratrum Alb, it's Veratrum viridi. So all these are just mentioned, but now what is most important is we have got congestion of the chest, heart, again aconite, asafoetida, glonine, lilium tick, nux moschata, pulsatilla is given.
Okay, are you there?
Yeah. So what I wanted to, before I go ahead, I have collected certain page numbers. This rubric, congestion, is a very short rubric or very small rubric given in the chest chapter of Kent's repertory, but in Robin Murphy's repertory, complete repertory, on page number 398, you can add, it is given the chapter of diseases, congestive cardiac failure, page 398.
Okay.
And all these rubrics which I am going to elicit slowly, they are all related to congestion or congestive cardiac failure. And whenever a patient of congestive cardiac failure needs to be approached with the help of repertory, all these new rubrics and the drugs given therein need to be taken into account. So we have got in the chapter, someone can add if they want to on a separate page. If they don't have Robin Murphy's repertory, it is helpful because this rubric in Ken's repertory is a very small rubric. Clinically, we can have lots of other rubrics and similar rubrics. So diseases, in the chapter of diseases in Robin Murphy, you have got a rubric, congestive cardiac failure, page number 398. Then again in the chapter of diseases, we have got fatty degeneration liver, comma, heart disease sequel of. A very, very common phenomena, because after the heart fails, the entire pressure is on the liver and the liver starts undergoing fatty degeneration. So it's definitely a sequel, a very, very common sequel, and a rubric is very important. Page 400. Robin Murphy, page 400. You have got diseases in chapter, fatty degeneration liver, heart disease sequel of. Then another rubric, diseases chapter, fatty degeneration liver, dilatation of right heart. The right heart and liver are very closely connected. The entire blood from the liver goes to the right heart via the inferior vena cava. So if the right heart fails, the entire load comes on the liver. And again, page 400, we have got diseases, fatty degeneration liver, dilatation of right heart. Then we have got in chapter of diseases again, hypertension. Only one rubric. This rubric is not given in cancer repertory. Hypertension. Page number 418. Robin Murphy, page number 418. We have got hypertension as a separate rubric in the chapter of diseases. Again, a very important rubric in the setting, because hypertension is one of the very, very common causes of heart failure in many patients throughout the world. And unfortunately, India leads the world in systemic hypertension and diabetes.
Okay, I'd like to make a note that Robin Murphy has many different editions of his volume, and I think I have his latest volume, edition 3. And yeah. therefore the page numbers that you're mentioning are not coordinated because he's expanded it. So just go ahead with the correct
rubrics. Yeah. That's it.
Okay.
So we have got, again, congestive cardiac failure, diseases, pulmonary edema, lungs. Pulmonary edema, lungs. Pulmonary edema and congestive heart failure also go hand in hand. One leads to the other. And pulmonary edema has loads of reasons why it occurs. One of the chief reasons is thrombosis of the peripheral arteries, particularly the artery in the calves. Pancreatic malignancies, any other malignancies, they lead to pulmonary edema. Pneumonias, they can end in pulmonary edema, and thereafter lead to congestive cardiac failure or congestion in the lungs. Pulmonary edema is also called as congestion lungs, because since we are reading the rubric congestion hyperemia of chest, so it's in the chest. If it's lungs, then it's called pulmonary edema. Then we have got diseases, systole extra. In Robin Murphy diseases chapter, systole extra, extra systoles. Now, many patients complain that, it's particularly females who are perimenopausal, either starting of menopause or ending menopause or during menopause, either or. Or many females who are early in pregnancy or even in puberty, they would complain of something, a fluttering sensation or a hyperemia of chest, some congestion in the chest, on the skin of the chest, some heat in the chest. And when you would measure their pulse, you would have missed beats, which is called as ventricular premature contraction or ventricular premature systoles or an extra systole. So it's very, very common. And because of that, you may have fluttering sensation in the chest or various types of sensation, and including congestion of the chest. So diseases systole extra is another rubric associated with congestion of the chest. One of the very important rubrics is given in chapter of emergencies in Robin Murphy, and it's called as asphyxia. Of course, asphyxia is lack of oxygenation in the blood, hypoxia. When the oxygen saturation in the blood decreases from a particular level to a particular level, then the person starts turning slightly blue or cyanotic, and there is a great congestion in the chest, in the lungs, as well as the heart. So we have got emergencies. Asphyxia is definitely an emergency. As far as I remember, the only drug given in antemtat. Then we have got chapter of children, heart non-closure of foramen ovale. In simple words, we put it as atrial septal defect. Whenever in the fetus, that is the baby, is inside the womb, the atrium, the right atrium and the left atrium, are separated by a membrane, which is called interatrial septum. Now, this interatrial septum has got a hole, which is called as foramen ovale, which is normal. But moment the baby is out, the moment the baby takes the first breath, this foramen ovale closes. Suppose if it doesn't close, it remains patent, then this patent foramen ovale is called as atrial septal defect. Now, generally, atrial septal defect would not cause much harm if it is a small hole. But over a period of time, particularly in females who are undergoing pregnancy, there at that time, or some they are on high altitudes or hypoxic states underwater, or if they have jobs which are requiring great amount of physical strength, in those conditions, the ASD may cause frequent chest pains, frequent pneumonias, So you can use this, again, leading to congestion of the chest, hyperemia of the chest, and that is why children, heart, non-closure of foramen ovale. Then,
would a person know that they had this condition if it wasn't diagnosed? Would they?
Not necessarily. I mean, many patients are accidentally diagnosed to have hole in the heart, either ventricular septal defect or atrial septal defect. I mean, suppose if you are not going to a doctor very often, or you don't need to go to a doctor at all, so the only time you'll be diagnosed is if you are going in for an insurance health checkup, or for that matter, some routine health checkup if you're going, and if a stethoscope is put on your chest piece, then one may hear a murmur. For example, lup, dup, lup, dup. This is a normal heart sound. And you may hear a murmur, lup, sh, dup, lup, sh, dup, lup, sh, dup, or lup, dup, sh, lup, dup, sh. This sh sound is a murmur sound, and it very clearly points out to some hole in the chest, hole in the interventricular septum, atrial and ventricular. They differ in the sounds. So it's quite easy to diagnose if you go to a physician. But normally you don't require to do anything about it unless the hole is causing much trouble. In only very few percentage of people, actually the atrial septal defect or ventricular septal defect does cause some complaints. And those complaints are breathlessness or easy fatigue, easy weakness, or at the most recurrent tendency to catch cold. The cold may not settle only in the nose or the throat. It may go down to the lungs and cause frequent bronchitis or pneumonia at the most. So in such cases, we do have a history of patients being admitted or hospitalized for pneumonia, frequent pneumonia in childhood. But this is not a common this. Only if the hole is very large, then you may have hemodynamic instability. That means the patient will be really symptomatic, and in some cases you may need to close the hole surgically. So it depends. But in very small holes, we have this rubric, and I don't remember the drugs given therein because I don't have the repertory.
Which one? What should I look up?
Children. In Robin Murphy, you have to look out in children, chapter of children, heart, non-closure of foramen ovale.
Okay,
a very common drug. I mean, when I started my homeopathic practice in cardiology, many...
Okay, the answer for that one... under heart, non-closure of foramen ovale is digitalis.
Yep, digitalis. So digitalis is the prime drug for congestion or congestive heart failure. That is congestion or hyperemia of chest. A very, very important drug. So basically, if the heart foramen ovale non-closure is causing heart failure, then you need to give digitalis. As it is, we would have been given.
And the listeners should realize that we're talking about a homeopathic remedy in potency, because digitalis is used traditionally in Western medicine as a heart remedy as well.
Yeah, it is called lanoxin, and it is to be used 5 days a week. You don't give 7 days a week, because it over a period of time, it builds up in your blood, the entire drug. The drug does not go out at one go. For example, if I've taken a drug, paracetamol, if it does its work, in one go, it will be out via my GI tract. But this is not so with digitalis. And that is why, very frequently, all those people who are on digitalis should measure their digitalis levels in the blood every 1 year, or if they get symptoms of persistent nausea or vomiting or jaundice, then they should measure digitalis. And digitalis, if it is high, the levels in the blood, if it's high, then it needs to be stopped, because digitalis poisoning or toxicity is very, very common amongst heart failure patients.
Okay, so in those cases, obviously you reduce or stop giving that drug. And homeopathically, would you use it as an isopathic remedy?
No, an interesting study was carried out by our Department of Homeopathic Cardiology in 2008. We actually had got about, I have conducted the study on 7 patients who were on digitalis, and we measured the digitalis levels. Who were on digitalis? Allopathic drugs, the dosage, 0.25 milligrams 5 days a week. They were on those drugs. So we selected 7 patients. And slowly and steadily, we initially measured their serum digitalis levels. Then we reviewed the drug. We introduced Digitalis Q, mother tincture with Digitalis. And we wanted to see if mother tincture did make did increase the serum values of Digitalis. We wanted to see in the blood. But then it was not found because still mother tincture is in crude form. So we wanted to see if 0.25 milligrams was withdrawn, and we added instead of potency only mother tincture Q of Digitalis. So did it make any difference? And to our, in our study, the study was around 6 to 7 months. So even after 7 months, the values of Digitalis in the blood did not increase, and still the patients were remarkably better symptomatically. Their congestive cardiac failure was well under control, all those 7 patients. And that's an important thing, because even if there are many patients out there who may have experienced toxicity of Digitalis, in those patients, we can withdraw the crude form or the allopathic form and replace it with mother tincture form, even if you are not confident of replacing with potency. Because if you, many people, homeopaths would like to give Digitalis 6 or Digitalis 30, but in such a period of time, if you start giving it on a daily basis, then it starts approving, which is very difficult to control. So you can't, allow that proving of Digitalis to take place in a particular patient. So it's better if you want to give in long term for congestion of the chest, then Digitalis mother tincture is better.
Fascinating. So this is one of the reasons why we encourage people to ask other cardiologists, other health professionals, physicians, nurses, to listen in on these shows, because you can get this little gem right here, especially if you're taking care of someone who has a heart condition or concerned about a family member who has a heart condition and is taking drugs. What are the side effects? We need to learn what they are and to be aware and observe if they are occurring. And then what do we do? Call Dr. Hodel to find out.
No, really speaking, suppose if I am a patient of heart failure and I am under a cardiologist, and if I happen to know that there is something called as Digitalis mother tincture in homeopathy or Digitalis in homeopathy, but that cardiologist of mine does not know. So I have a moral responsibility of telling him or her that, see, there is a study carried out. The Digitalis in homeopathy is the same as allopathy, but the in allopathy, the material dose is very high. In homeopathy, there is no material dose, and yet there is efficacy. Still it acts by all parameters. We can compare them symptomatic parameters, because the patients would definitely complain of lesser swelling. Foxglove was primarily invented for reducing swelling. It's a renal tonic. It's a renal diuretic. So it's an excellent diuretic. Before Lasix, one of the most important allopathic drug for a diuretic, came up, it was only Digitalis throughout all these years. From centuries on, we have been using Digitalis as a wonderful diuretic. So, in potency as well as in mother tincture form, the excessive diuresis occurs and the swelling is decreased. Secondly, there is no danger of toxicity of Digitalis, which is quite a common phenomena with crude drugs. And that is why good cardiologists would always ask their patients to measure serum Digitalis levels every year, or practically 9 months or so, depending upon the dose one is taking. But that is not so with homeopathy. So one can have the benefit of Digitalis drug, homeopathic drug in potency, if one does not wish to go in for allopathic Digitalis for the same condition.
Now, what if a person is hypertensive and is concerned about an enlarged heart, or for a lifetime of this concern about their heart, are they able to take the mother tincture Digitalis, which I have in my garden, foxglove? Maybe I'm getting some good vibes from there. But is it okay for a person to take the mother tincture if they are not being given it by a physician?
No, I would recommend, because like Digitalis, we have got other wonderful remedies also. like Strophanthus, like Adonis vernalis, and so on and so forth. Quite many remedies are there. So Digitalis is not the only drug. And like Digitalis, there are so many other drugs. So if a person can visit or can consult a homeopath, it is much, much more better. Now, the second question is, once Digitalis started, allopaths would recommend it throughout life. I mean, till you die, you have to take Digitalis. That is the dictum. Unless, of course, there is toxicity. But in homeopathy, I don't do so. I mean, till the patient is stabilized, till the patient is symptom-free, I would keep them on Digitalis and then would make a totality of the case and give him or her the correct simillimum in the correct potency, repeat it for some time, so that lifelong one need not take any form of Digitalis or digital drug for life. That is a very, very important thing, because many patients can't afford Digitalis or likewise like drugs, at least in third world countries, India and Indian subcontinent and Africa, no. Although drug is available, it becomes quite difficult to take. The financial constraints are there. Second constraints would be frequent checkups. One, it's very easy to go to a cardiologist in, say, developed countries. But here, if I'm staying quite far away from the city, in the villages, or my literacy level is low, I will not frequent the cardiologist quite frequently. Once a year, probably 3-4 years, and is fine for me. But at the same time, I would be suffering. In such cases, homeopathy is much better. In such cases, Digitalis mother tinctures, even if taken for a particular long time, would not cause any harm. It's very cheap, and you need not undergo all those tests, liver function tests, again, mandatory for people on Digitalis, because Digitalis is primarily excreted out via the liver. And if the liver mechanism fails, for whatever reason, Digitalis keeps on collecting inside the blood, and that's a bad omen. So a person on Digitalis, allopathic Digitalis doses, would need to go liver function test once a year, as well as serum Digitalis levels. That is not there with homeopathy. That you need not take place.
One more question on this account, and that is, if a person has been taking all of these heart medications, allopathic heart medications, for 30 years or more, is it possible to get off of those drugs?
Yeah, perfectly well. And many patients do come to us who have already been taking drugs. They are ultimately fed up of those drugs taking. Rather, the situation there, see, the drug started 30 years ago. That gentleman or that lady whose constitution of 30 years ago was quite different. And over all these 30 years, the nutrition, the temperament, the symptomatology has changed, but the drugs have remained the same. I doubt the value of such drugs as a physician. I really doubt, because it's totally unwise that you have to actually individualize the need for a particular drug, even if it's allopathy or anypathy. Every single year, one needs to reassess whether this patient of mine today requires. For example, I started an antihypertensive drug, allopathic antihypertensive drug, say 20 years ago in a gentleman who was working in an office. But now after 10 years, he comes to me. 20 years he comes to me. Now he's perfectly retired. He has got peace of mind. He has got grandchildren to play with. Does he require those antihypertensive medications still? He may be having stress, but today he's stress-free. So it is worthwhile to reassess. It is worthwhile to withdraw slowly and gradually, because all these drugs are actually making him... one is addicted to all these drugs. So the addiction needs to be stopped. And most important is individualized need for that particular patient, whether it be allopathy, homeopathy, or any other pathy. If my patient does not require the drug, it is mandatory for me to withdraw it slowly and gradually and reassess, and then keep him or off the drugs for as long as I can. The patient has a right to remain drug free.
It's a beautiful thing to hear you speak and to encourage people, because people have not only a physical addiction, but a mental addiction, an emotional addiction.
Throughout the world, globally, one of the worst addictions is not alcohol, it is not tobacco, it is fast therapy, whatever reason may be, whichever therapy, even homeopathy. Many people say, I am a homeopathic patient right from my childhood. Please give me for headache. I have to go to an office. I have to go to a meeting. Please give me urgently. This small continuous suppressions of symptoms, not letting the body heal itself, not realizing the very fact that all our drugs, majority of drugs are made from either animals or the vegetable kingdom, both again from living things. Now, if a plant can heal itself or an animal can heal itself, why can't human body heal itself? It does heal itself. It has got its reparative property. Only it requires time. And that time is quite individualistic. I may require a day and you may require, say, 2 days. But then if you give time to a body, it is self-healing. So is with mind. The mind also heals and mind makes the body heal. Only thing is requires time. It does not require drugs. This is a very, very important message. It should go out time and again. People should hesitate taking drugs. And once taking, they should reassess whether they still keep on requiring those drugs. They should give their time. It is a fundamental duty. It's a fundamental right of that Pink Constitution so that the body and the mind heal themselves. They don't require outside support every time.
Okay, let's repeat that in the future shows so that people hear that message that is so important. And as doctors,
we are helpers to the patient. We are not born only to prescribe medications. We have not learned the knowledge only to investigate the patient time and again. Keep on investigating the patient and keep on prescribing medications. It is a fundamental duty also to withdraw the drugs when they are not needed. It is not for the patient, but more for the doctor, whichever pathy he or she belongs to. If I have the right to prescribe, I should also have the right to withdraw. And that is important. Unfortunately, many of my colleagues, they don't exercise the second right, the right to withdraw. Once they start the medication, they think that medication is for life. That's a very sad part.
It's a dependency issue, I guess.
But you are actually creating a patient. You have actually created another patient. You have created an addict. You have changed, you have evolved the miasm to a syphilitic state, a destructive state. Addiction is a destructive state. So you're making him or her more incurable instead of curable. You are going against nature. How long? How long is this going to last? We actually say much about vaccinations. We have to also raise a voice against this, that unnecessary medications should not be given, whichever pathy it may be. Homeopathy, of course, yes.
Okay, so we kind of steered away from our...
Yeah.
Study, but that's okay because it's important messages.
And then we have got loads of rubrics resembling congestion, again given in both Ken's as well as Robin Murphy in the chapter of chest, both the books. Congestion of the heart, obviously we're reading. Constriction at the night, a classical symptom of heart failure. You patient experience a constricting feeling in the entire chest, particularly at night, 1 to 1.5 hours after he or she sleeps. And if if the patient is lying on a plain bed, if there is slight inclination of 30 degrees towards the head end, the head end is raised up, then not to be, and that is the treatment for this sort of symptom. If the patient has a constricting sensation in the night because of heart failure, the only thing one needs to do is not addition of pillows, but elevate the head end of the bedside completely up roughly by 30 degrees and one would not experience this symptom. So instead of drugs, just elevate the head end. So chest constriction at night. Then we have got chest constriction falling asleep. Page number 827. The next page, chest constriction falling asleep when? We have got bryonia, we have graphitis, and we have lachesis. Lachesis, obviously, everyone knows that as soon as the patient goes to sleep, he or she starts having symptoms. But graphitis, a quite unusual remedy for such situation, but works very well. I have tried it out a teen number of times. Instead of lachesis, this remedy works quite well. Imagine, there is nowhere in Materia Medica mentioned in graphitis about heart failure, but yet in the chapter of chest constriction, falling asleep, when graphitis is given in 2 marks.
And what was the third one that you mentioned?
Lycosis, obviously.
No,
bryonia, graphitis, and lycosis. So bryonia is obviously 1 mark, but graphitis and lycosis are 2 marks. Lycosis, obviously, everyone knows, because the prime symptom of lycosis, all complaints aggravated when sleeping, just before sleep. So, on going to sleep. When graphitis, one would not ever think of graphitis in heart failure patients. So, because it's not given in Materia Medica. But in repertory, it is given, and as a matter of fact, we have tried it out in many patients, and it does act. Then we have got chest dilatation of heart. We'll be discussing about dilatation of the heart, page number 828 on Kent's repertory. Chest fullness of the heart, again we'll be discussing. They all are very similar to congestion of the chest. Chest hepatization of lung, page number 824, we'll be discussing. Chest dropsy, disease with organic, again page number 829. Chest hypertrophy of the heart, we'll be discussing. Chest infiltration of heart and lungs. Infiltration of heart and lungs, very all these rubrics actually come, or they're different symptoms of congestion of chest. Then in the chapter of respiration, again in Kent's repertory, we have got respiration difficult midnight, a classical symptom, midnight difficulty in respiration. The patient goes to sleep and suddenly from deep sleep, he or she wakes up and gasps for breath, a very, very important phenomenon which is called as paroxysmal, because it is sudden onset, nocturnal, because it is at night, dyspnea means breathlessness, PND, paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, unless otherwise proved, it is a very sure symptom of left heart failure. It's a dictum. If a patient complains, keeps on complaining that at the middle of the night, I go to bed quite nicely, I take my dinner, after some time I go to bed, I do get sleep, I sleep for 1 hour, 1.5 hours, 2 hours, and suddenly out of the blue, in middle of the night, I have to wake up. I have to search for the fan. I have to go out. I have to have open air. That AC air condition is not enough for me. Even if it's a cold air, I need to have open air. This is a very, very classical symptom called as paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea. Unless otherwise proved, it is indicative of left heart failure. And it's an ominous symptom, because that means that paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, once it starts, it means that left heart failure is far advanced, so may not be amenable to cure. But at least it can be settled down. Then we have got respiration paroxysmal, again, page number 774. In the chapter of Kent's respiration, we have got paroxysmal, that means sudden onset. That's page number 774. Then again, because of congestion of heart, we have got a dry cough, which is a particularly nocturnal cough. Dry cough, cough night, page number 781. 781 and 783, we have got cough choking. In the chapter of cough, there are two sub-rubrics. Cough at night, again an asthmatic cough or a bronchial cough, or a cough arising from the lungs, would be when the patient is awake, that is in a waking hour, you would generally expect cough because of lung disorders. Whereas at night, if it is there, middle of the night or late part of the night or very early in the morning, generally heart conditions should be thought of, and of which congestion of the heart is the chief disorder in which there is nocturnal cough or cough night. Again, there can be various reasons for choking along with cough. One of them is bronchial asthma, that is very common. Another is cardiac asthma. Cardiac asthma is another name for congestion of chest or congestion of the heart. Congestive cardiac failure, or another name is cardiac asthma. And last rubric, very closely resembling congestion, is in the chapter of breathing. We have got rattling infants in. Rattle means a sound which is a bubbling sound. If you put a stethoscope, or even if you put your ear on the chest and the baby is breathing, then you can hear rattling sound or bubbling sound. Again, an ominous sound, because it means that the fluid is filled inside the lungs and it is a pulmonary edema or a congestion of the heart. So it's quite a serious condition. It requires an intensive therapy. And we always when we read Antem Tat, we read about death rattles in children. So of which, forget about death, but rattling in infants is quite common because of heart failure. So all these rubrics I have collected, and they resemble very closely, rather they are the features of congestion of heart. And that is why this rubric particularly is better given in Robin Murphy than in Kent.
Okay. So there are other sources besides Kent to search and learn about rubrics. Of course, reading the Materia Medica, the source of the clinical records, is a good place to study. We have in the chat a message that says chest constriction could be myocardial infarction, something urgent. What to do?
Well, what to do? Very well. One of the chief remedies, yeah, it could be. It could be myocardial infarction or myocardial ischemia at the most. Angina pectoris is what we call. And constriction is very, very common. One of the chief drugs for constriction of chest in an entire Materia Medica is Cactus grandiflorus. The highest available potency should be administered and the constriction will go away. It really works wonders. In fact, today morning itself, I had a patient. She is aged 54 years. She has undergone a late menopause, and she resides about 100 kilometers from my city, that is Nagpur. And her son is an allopathic physician who practices at that place. And since morning 3:30 or 4 a.m., she has been starting complaining of constriction in the chest. They showed there, I mean, he took an EKG, it was normal. So thinking that it is only cervical spondylosis or just pain because of muscle, he did not do anything. But the pain continued, this entire feeling continued. So they came over to Nagpur to show me whether it is related to the heart or whether it is simple muscular pain. Even I took an EKG, it was normal. Electrocardiogram was normal both times. But then I said, let us just do a blood examination. See, whenever the heart undergoes ischemia or heart as a heart attack, if you get, there is heart cries. And the tears are called as enzymes. And one of the important enzymes is called CPK, that is creatinine phosphokinase MB. A very, very simple examination, CPK MB, is the only investigation to be done. If that is positive, and it was positive in this case, then the person surely had a heart attack. But she had a minor heart attack. We gave her Cactus 0/1, started every hourly, and in only 3 doses, the entire pain disappeared. And she is still there with me, admitted at my hospital. And we'll be monitoring her over 24 hours. And if the CPK-MB levels come down to normal, because her EKG, her electrocardiogram still is normal. So again, I want to give her a message. Many, many times it happens that clinically you feel that the patient has got a heart attack or a constriction chest, it's myocardial ischemia or angina. But investigations, particularly ECG or electrocardiogram, may be normal, repeatedly normal. Do not believe on that electrocardiogram. Believe on what you see. Patient is more important than the paper. Electrocardiogram can be only a simple investigation. It may not show every time the entire pathology. Please do not worry. In this case, if your heart says that this gentleman or this patient has got an ischemia, please go ahead with the treatment. Finally, whatever you do so, the Cactus does solve lots of problems. You generally do not need to go to other remedies once you have started Cactus. If a particular potency of Cactus does not work, for example, we generally start with 0/1 millisimil. Or if millisimil is not available, we start with 30. And every 2 hours or 3 hours, we increase the potency, 30, 200, 1M, 10M, 50M, CM. This is called as Kent's octave scale. Dr. James Tyler Kent, whose repertory we are reading, has enunciated a scale which is called as Kent's octave scale. So as octave has got 8 notes, so also when you are dealing with an acute emergency, you may increase the potency by 8 times it can increase. So starting with 30, a lowest potency, go on to 200 directly, then jump on to 1M, 10M, 50M, CM, till you find results.
Okay, can you just explain a little bit when you say, for the folks who are new, 0 by 1 millisimole, you're saying this is a 1C? Or
yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, no, 0 by 1 is millisimole scale. Now, power or potency. In homeopathy, there are 3 scales of potency. And obviously, there are rules laid down to use particular scales. In America and many European countries, the scale used is decimal scale. It's the lowest available scale and is denoted by X.
Okay.
For example, 1X, 6X, 200X, 30X, so X. It is one scale, and many people are very comfortable in practicing to that scale, in that scale. Of course, results are there in every single scale. That's not an issue. But it is a matter of comfort for the physician or the training which one has had in how to use the different scales of potency. So many of course, I as a physician, I'm comfortable with all scales, and in different patients, I select different scales as to my comfort level. So second is a centesimal scale. Throughout the world, majority in the Indian subcontinent and Malaysia and all the Asian countries, we use centesimal scale. Again, in Europe also, France, UK, Germany, centesimal scale is used very, very often, more oftener. And very few people, of course, use the last available scale, that is the millisimal scale. Now, millisimal scale, obviously, the philosophy behind the millisimal scale is quite debatable, because that was given in the 6th edition of Organon. Hahnemann has written six editions of Organon, first to 5th. But after writing the 6th edition, he died, and the 6th edition was not known to the homeopathic fraternity for a pretty long time, say at the most 80 years. But so many things, many philosophies, what Hahnemann has given the 5th edition vis-a-vis 6th edition, they don't go hand in hand. So quite many orthodox homeopaths throughout the world, they still stick on to the 5th edition of Organon, and many new people go on to 6th edition of Organon. So in the 6th edition of Organon, there is a scale which is called millisimal scale, which is denoted as 0/1 or 0/1. It is also called an LM scale, 0/1, 0/2, 0/3. A wonderful scale to practice. Of course, I use it quite often, and it gives a very fast result, more faster than the centesimal or decimal scale. So this is in brief the potency picture.
Thank you. Yes, okay, so I am familiar with the LM scale, and I'll know what you mean when you say the millisimal scale. So we were just talking about, took you into that, this particular incident of this woman who came with constriction, and you emphasized that the physician must use his own senses and the senses of the patient to really determine what is happening, and not totally rely only on some lab tests that
exactly
give you...
And not only the physician, the patient himself or herself, if she feels, obviously if they are not psychic enough or not melodramatic enough, but if they feel that they are having a particular ailment, then they should go to that sort of speciality and at least ask the physician to confirm. For example, if a perfectly fine gentleman suddenly feels that chest pain is there, it is because of the heart. So then that intuition or that feeling should be removed. So it's not always the physician. Obviously, the physician should always go by his or her teachings and should rely on the medical intuitions. Over a period of time, if you're seeing continuously many, many patients, you come to know, your heart says that, no, this is heart attack. This is not a heart attack. Irrespective of the patient complaining and whatever the features, you just come to know. So you should rely on that hunch, what we call, whatever that intuitive reflex. That comes with everyone. And many times, you are more likely to be right rather than your investigations. Investigations can come wrong many times. And because just because the investigations are not positive, that does not mean that we don't treat the patient. After all, the patient has come for the symptom and not for the nosological diagnosis, whether he or she has a heart attack or not. So cactus in this sense really is wonderful drug for constriction, tension, tightness. And hardly after three to four doses, she has been settling down and she has not complained. So it's from morning, I think she has come on 11:30 a.m. and it's now 10 o'clock at night in India. And she's perfectly lying down well. We have not put her any drugs. And so it's a simple few doses of cactus has solved her problem.
Right. And cactus, we are skipping the delusions rubrics as we go through the chapter, but they do feel as if they have a cage around their ribs or a vice. So people might use those words to say how it feels to them.
Exactly. I mean, you can have a sensation of an iron band or a band around your chest or something tightening around your chest or a heart, a very, very common feature of cactus. And even it is a very common feature of a drug called iodum, another common feature of Lilium tig. These three share the same delusions or the same sensations. It is cactus, it is iodum, it is Lilium tig, all three. But iodum and Lilium tig are lesser used. Cactus is obviously is most commonest used in heart medicine, for particularly this rubric constriction of the chest. Of course, there are so many drugs. As far as we have not completed the congestion of the chest, I wanted to speak something. And that is, when we manage congestion of the chest, particularly because of heart ailments, as I always said that there is a paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, a very important symptom. But when you examine the patient, then you have got bubbly rails. You put his chest piece on the chest and you get, the moment the patient breathes out, you get gurgur, gurgur, this bubbling sound is there. Then when you see an x-ray, the heart size is enlarged. It is called cardiomegaly. Cardio means the heart and megaly means enlargement. Then when you put a stethoscope, you normally should get, in a normal person, you should get lup, dup, lup, dup, lup, dup. But in a heart failure, particularly the left side of the heart, you get, this is called as a galloping of the horse or S3 gallop. Normally a human being has got four heart sounds. First heart sound, lup, second heart sound, dup, lup, dup. You normally don't hear the third and the fourth heart sound in routine practice or in normal people. But suppose if you start hearing the third heart sound, it is in the form of a gallop. Then it's an ominous sign. It is a definite indicator of left heart failure. Then in heart failure, you can have ankle edema or swelling near the ankles. Breathlessness on exertion. The liver may be enlarged in size because the liver is intimately related to the heart, right heart. And if the right heart is failing, the entire blood is congested in the liver. And you have got it, we call it as congestive hepatomegaly. And if you do a post-mortem examination of this liver, it is called as nutmeg liver. Nutmeg is a drug, Nux vomica. And when you see the Nux vomica seed, the way it resembles the similar picture you get in a post-mortem picture of liver. So you have got a nutmeg liver or a hepatomegaly because of heart failure, congestive heart failure. Then the fluid may collect in the lungs and you will have a pleural effusion. The pleura are the layer outside the lungs. The fluid collects in between the two layers of pleura. There are two layers of pleura. So pleural effusion is there. And you have particularly tachycardia. That means the pulse rate would be higher. In an adult man or a woman, you will have a pulse rate more than 120 beats per minute. That is a persistent tachycardia. So suppose if you give any drug and your tachycardia decreases, then you are giving the correct drug because you are going to the correct... If you decrease the tachycardia, that means the heart failure is decreasing. If the tachycardia remains stable or is increasing, then whatever drug you are giving is wrong or you should rethink the drug to be given. Now, there are many drugs available. Obviously, we have been reading the rubrics. But few drugs have not been mentioned here and they are particularly very, very important. Either you give them in tincture form, you give repeated doses, you give them in millisimil or potency form, whatever. But the drugs are digitalis, which is already mentioned. Second drug is trophanthus. Third drug is eel serum. Eel serum, a lesser known drug, but a wonderful remedy, and it decreases heart failure very fast. Suppose if a patient has a long-term congestion of the heart, a person who has undergone, who's having chronic obstructive airway disease for a long time, emphysema for a long time, and because of that lung disease, the heart has failed. In such patients, we give a drug called Squilla, S-Q-U-I-L-L-A, Squilla, a very, very specific drug, and to be repeated, say, every alternate day or every 3 days, and great deal of patients respond to Squilla, and they do not keep on suffering from all those symptoms of heart failure.
And is that for the...
particularly, lung disease causing heart failure, okay. We have drug called Squilla.
Okay.
Suppose if the kidney disease is causing heart failure. See, heart is intimately related to all other organs as well. If there's liver failure, ultimately heart failure is going to take place. If there's kidney failure, heart failure is bound to take place. If there is lung failure, heart failure is about to take place. So, if the heart failure is not there, primary drug for heart failure is digitalis and strophanthus. But if the kidney is failing or has failed and is leading ultimately to heart failure, then the drug is not, many people would choose Apis mellifica, but I would choose eel serum. If my patient is complaining of long-term lung disease, for example, obstructive airway disease or emphysema, I would choose Squilla instead of any other drug, and I know that the heart failure will be taken care of.
And is this, alternate days in a low potency?
That depends upon the individual. These are the drugs. Now, the potency and the method of administration would depend, person-to-person changes. I mean, in some person, I may give potency. In some, I may continue mother tinctures. I would give single dose. In other, I may undergo frequent repetition. So, that is totally dependent. Now, these drugs which I am saying are clinically the most often used at a center, and they have given us remarkable results both and at OPD level, that is outpatient department, or even when the patient is hospitalized. So I need to mention another drug very well and very surely indicated for only right heart failure is Iberis. Iberis one would not think of in heart failure, but is a wonderful remedy for management of only right. There are times when only a single ventricle is failed, that is only the right side has failed. In such a situation, you need to give Iberis. It definitely controls. In hardly few doses, you would have the right ventricle failure controlled. Another remedy for controlling right heart failure is Convallaria megalis. Convallaria megalis, a drug which I often mention, and it controls failure, as I said, to a great extent. So, these were specific remedies. They may or may not been given, I have not seen, but one needs to be seeing that. One important thing is all these drugs improve the performance of the heart. The pumping capacity is improved. So, on the echocardiogram, if your doctor says that the ejection fraction, EF, is less than 30%. The normal ejection fraction would be above 80% for all adults. But if it has come down to 30%, then we call this heart as a failure heart. Now, all these drugs which I have mentioned can and have the ability of increasing the ejection fraction or the pumping capacity of the heart. And that is a very, very important boon homeopathy has for heart failure patients. In addition, many times what happens is, because the heart has enlarged in size, heart has got a single pacemaker, which is the SA node or sinoatrial node. Many times what happens is, there is SA node dysfunction. So, there are other pacemakers which take the lead. And in such a situation, you are going to break the rhythm of the heart. So, arrhythmia is a very common complication of congestive cardiac failure. And many people die just because of the arrhythmia and not because of the heart failure. So, for arrhythmia control, we do have specific remedies And one of the important remedies I should mention is quinidine. Quinidine has been used over thousands of years, right from aborigines of America till Greeks and Romans and even Hindus, and everyone has used quinidine for this particular purpose, and that is arrhythmia control, whether it is because of heart failure or without heart failure. And even in homeopathy, we use quinidine in potency to abort arrhythmias, and it really acts as a wonderful drug. Now, arrhythmias, again, is a big chapter. Lots and different types of arrhythmias are there, but majority of arrhythmias do respond to quinidine. Majority of ventricular arrhythmias respond to quinidine, because there are different types of arrhythmias, atrial arrhythmias and ventricular arrhythmias. But ventricular arrhythmias would respond to quinidine, and atrial arrhythmias respond to Sumbul. So, on an average, I'm giving you the drugs. Then second most important thing in management of heart, congestion of the chest or congestion of the heart, should have a low sodium diet. There should be no salt at the table, or cooking salt should be omitted or reduced as much as possible. Unfortunately, throughout India, we have got, Indians are the largest consumers of salt. We consume salt, more than anyone else. So in Indians particularly, we have to make it specific that salt has to be reduced on the table. Then
we've talked about that quite a bit. Maybe we'll do an entire show about salt, because okay. It's such a huge controversy.
Yeah.
And can you repeat again? I missed what you said about the Sumbul.
Sumbul.
Yes.
Sumbul, yeah, arrhythmia control. There are two types of arrhythmias. The rhythm disorder can be because of problems in the ventricle and problems in the atria. So if there's a ventricular arrhythmia, so rhythm is broken by the ventricles, where the ventricles are not following the rhythm, then the drug for correction is quinidine. Whereas if the atria are not following the rhythm, the drug for correction is Sumbul.
Okay.
Then in such patients, there should not be any intravenous fluids for whatsoever reason they require. For example, if these patients have got gastroenteritis, or for that matter anything, they should not take intravenous fluids. Otherwise, the heart failure can worsen and the patient may land up in death. And in rare cases, one needs to resort to mechanical removal of fluid. For example, like removing the fluid directly from the lungs. But in such situation, it becomes quite a painful phenomena, and we still have drugs. For example, if there is lungs, the fluid has collected in the pleura, and you've got pleural effusion, and the finest remedies in homeopathy we have got is Kali iode. Kali iode helps us in lower potency to resolve the entire pleural effusion over a period of time, so you don't need to put a needle inside the chest and pull out the fluid. In absence of this, ultimately, if Kali iode is not given, then there are no drugs, or there are hardly any drugs which can decrease the fluid inside the pleura. So you have to put in the needle and take out the fluid. It's a very painful phenomenon. It's quite painful. It's very easier said than done.
And it seems as if it would just collect again.
Yeah, that's another sad part. Moment you keep on pulling out the fluid keeps on collecting. Morning you have drained the fluid, evening you find that the entire fluid has collected again. It's a pitiable situation. It's so sad that you become helpless. The doctors become helpless because they just keep on taking out the fluid, and the fluid keeps on collecting. And the moment you take out the fluid, the patient becomes so weak that you have to infuse further fluids. So, you can't help in such a situation. Then, if there's a kidney failure or heart failure, one of the important methods for the patient to be alive is dialysis. And as physicians, if your drugs are failing or they're not acting up to the mark, then one needs to advise dialysis. Of course, drugs like yeast serum would help patients to be off dialysis for a longer time. But then dialysis is another method of keeping such patients alive over a period of time. Then if the fluid starts collecting in the abdominal cavity, then we do have wonderful drugs like apocynum, apis and helleborus. If the thirst is too much, then it's apocynum. If the patient is thirstless, then it's apis. And those the thirst is as before, no change in thirst. before when the patient was absolutely all right at that time, and today the patient is having abdominal fluid collected, ascites, still the thrust has not changed, then we have give Heliborus. So there are three remedies. We avoid giving arsenic alb in such situations, because in Boric's repertory it is written arsenic alb is a drug for euthanasia, and in clinical practice, euthanasia means mercy killing. So in clinical practice, we do experience that in such cases, if you give arsenic in slightly higher dose, if your potency is a bit higher, the patient may succumb. So I avoid generally to give arsenic in such cases, although it is indicated as a drug of choice for many cases, but then aposynum does the work of arsenic, and Apis and Heliborus are again the drugs wherein the fluid is collecting because of heart failure inside the abdominal cavity. So all in all, we have revised actually heart failure in the chapter of congestion of the chest. If anyone has got any questions, I would be most happy to answer.
Okay, well, I will keep an eye. So far, there's no comments on the chat. I think that they're just taking it all in. You've gone quickly through so many different remedies and so many different situations where the heart is affected. It affects the whole body and the other organs, and how we are related in this way, you know, to this pumping action of keeping us alive and breathing. So next week at the same time, 11:30 a.m., that is in Eastern Time, and 9 p.m. Wednesday in India, we will continue. And we're going to continue on with the congestion. I was trying to follow.
We'll continue with constriction now.
Oh, with constriction. Okay. Very good. I guess I wasn't... You were using specifically other repertories, because I don't feel as if we went through what Kent... Okay, I see on waking, opening air, weakness and nausea, pregnancy. I'm just quickly reviewing here, exertion and excitement. I mean, there are specific things listed in Kent. So,
in fact, just a minute. Talking about pregnancy during... day before yesterday, it was on 5th of this month, June. We had a patient, she was an unregistered patient, in the sense that this patient had come to us absolutely new, and her 9 months and 11 days were over. She was due, pregnant female, primary, that is the first pregnancy was there. And she is aged around 23 years. Now, unfortunately, she has come from a village, and we gave her a trial of labor. And giving a trial of labor, the moment she came to my mother, because she is a pregnant female and wanted to had come for labor. So, but then when I examined her, I found a murmur. And then when we did an examination, we did an echocardiogram, it turned out to be a rheumatic heart disease she is having, and mitral stenosis. But unfortunately, she had landed up in heart failure. Now, it is a very, very problematic situation how to deal with this lady. Because she could not have mustered the courage to have the pains for delivery, and she already had heart failure. At the same time, we could not do a cesarean C-section. So now what to do? I mean, we were really perplexed. We wanted to give trial of labor, but we knew that this would be worsening. The scenario would be worsening. So, but we started with colophyllum. We started with 1 mL. And initially, she did have pains, but there was no cervical dilatation. And slowly and steadily, the cervical dilatation took place, and she delivered normally. Moment she delivered normally, the baby is fine. The baby cried immediately at birth, but then soon after delivery, we started her with natrum muriaticum. And now, because natrum muriaticum now is given two marks, congestion during pregnancy, of course, just after pregnancy, but we started with natrum mur 0/1. She's still on natrum muriaticum since 1 week, twice a day, and her heart failure is controlled. So we really had a tough time deciding what to do. So in such scenarios, when the patient is in front of you, she's in labor, you have to save the mother as well as the child, you can't even abort, you can't do a C-section, what do you do? homeopathy medicines sometimes are a great boon. I salute them because Natramur did save her and Colophyllum did an easy delivery. So no C-section and nothing.
Amazing. Truly, truly amazing that you have this gift, and we all have this gift. It's a matter of teaching people and learning about it and using them properly, and also collaborating together to know what to do, because many people would be stumped in that situation, and you don't know what the outcome would be. And here, the patient did not have to undergo surgery or anything. So, totally amazing. Well, we're going to see you again next week. I want everyone to, if they love the show, let us know. Give us some feedback. Give Dr. Adil a call. He is at homeocad.net?
Not org.
Okay.
homeocad.org.
Right. So homeocad.org.
Org.
And you can email me, homeopathyworldcommunity@gmail.com. Send us your questions, your comments. What do you want to talk about? Do you have specific cases? We're all learning together. If you want your doctor to learn about this, tell them that we have this educational show. This is not for self-prescribing. This is for people to learn and become aware that this is simply our Homeopathy World Community broadcasting. Okay, I hope you have a good evening, everyone, and we will see you next week continuing on. Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. So, bye-bye,
you know,
everyone.
I wish my viewers a very great week, and they may have lots and lots of benefit with homeopathy, and they stay healthy and happy. And if they require anything in the sickness, homeopathy is always there for them. And, of course, if they require my help, I am also available anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.